Well, hello out there in podcast land, and welcome back to Guilty Pleasures, the show where we celebrate the movies we love despite what critics, public opinion, or even our own God-given sense might tell us. I'm your host, Lou Hare, for the Front Row Network. Welcome back. It's been a minute since we've had a guilty pleasure. We got real busy. We had Oscar season. Then life kind of happened for a lot of us. And now as we're all kind of stuck in our homes, now we got time to talk about some movies and watch some movies. So get ready, because we got some doozies coming up for you. But I'm very excited to talk about tonight's movie. It's celebrating its 30th anniversary this year. We are going to get deep into yet another Sylvester Stallone film, and we're going to be talking Rocky V. And I am excited to have both of my guests, one of whom is smiling at me right now as I introduce, one is shaking his head in consternation. So I'll start with the more positive one. Thank you very much. And please welcome back a regular contributor to Guilty Pleasures and also to a few of our other Front Row Network shows, Dr. John Bowser. How's it going, John?
Hey, it's great. Thanks for having me on. You mentioned the doctor part. And so I have a PhD in population health. And so the past couple of weeks, I've been doing a few podcasts with the public health program at St. Ambrose around COVID-19, the coronavirus. So after doing some of that, you know, kind of deep, heavy stuff, it's nice to switch tracks to the heartwarming tale of a boxer with irreversible brain damage who's been robbed blind by his accountant. So happy to be here.
Uh-huh. Good, good. Can't wait. And joining us again, it's been a minute since we've had him on the podcast, but I'm always delighted to make him watch trash and then talk to me about it. Please welcome back Aaron Randolph. How's it going, Aaron?
Hey, I just don't know. Hasn't America suffered enough? Why are we doing this to people? I mean, this is really, this movie is a blight. It is a plague in and of itself. It was suffering. I told you earlier, I social distanced my family from the movie. I stayed up late last night to watch it by myself, so I didn't have to make them endure this movie.
Well, you know, I think, first of all, that's what we do here. I mean, we're going to sit and watch some movies. You know, some of them are going to be better than others. But I think it's important that we go back and we revisit because, as we learn, those who do not learn from their past are doomed to repeat it. So I feel like maybe by talking about this, by getting this out, we can give a message to future generations,
which is don't watch Rocky V. Please.
So for those of you who are not up on Rocky V, just a very quick plot summary, because I know we're going to get into it, but in a nutshell, when Rocky loses his fortune, he goes back to his old neighborhood and takes on a new protege. It's got almost all of the returning favorites, those who haven't already been killed off in the franchise yet. So Sylvester Stallone is back, Talia Shire, Burt Young. And also, I guess I spoke too soon because we do have one returning from the dead. Burgess Meredith does show up as Mickey. He comes back. First appearance from him since Rocky III. And also added to that cast is the son of Sylvester Stallone, Sage Stallone, playing Rocky Jr., and also the villain of the film, played by Tommy Morrison, who, oh boy, when we talk about Tommy Morrison, it's gonna, just fair warning, people, it's going to get dark. anyway, so it was written by Sylvester Stallone, not directed by Stallone. This is actually only the second of that series that isn't directed by Stallone, but it's directed by the director of the original Rocky, John G. Avildsen. So, you know, this is an interesting movie because in 1990, people were actually really excited at the prospect of a Rocky V. It was touted as a big blockbuster. It was set up for a holiday release. It was released on November Thanksgiving weekend of 1990. and people expected it to do very well. The Rocky IV had come out about 5 years prior and was one of the biggest hits of the year. This one comes out and not so much. It does $40 million on about a $40 million budget. So it breaks even, which is, for context, Rocky IV did almost $300 million worldwide. Now, fortunately, Stallone could do no wrong internationally. The movie makes $114 million worldwide, but it does a third of what Rocky IV basically does. It was famously beat out that Thanksgiving weekend by a movie that was under everybody's radar, Home Alone. And so it's the first movie to go down to Home Alone in Home Alone's record run. And you can kind of see why, because this movie is not well received by anybody. Still to this day, it's got a current Rotten Tomato score of 29% and an IMDb score of 5.3. So let's get into it. I know both of you are, we're all big fans of the Rocky franchise. So let's start, because I know some people see these movies out of order. So I want to maybe get some context. Had you, John, had you seen Rocky V sequentially? Did you see it out of order? What's your history of when the first time you saw Rocky V, and what was your initial reaction?
So I think I saw it. I saw it last, but I didn't see the entire franchise in order. I mean, it's been so long, but my guess is Rocky IV was probably the first one I saw. Then we kind of went Rocky 1, 2, 3, and then Rocky 5, just because you just had to see it if you saw the first four. And my initial reaction was that it was terrible. But I didn't quite understand how craptastic it was, because it was just such a letdown from the other Rockies that I didn't allow myself to really dive into the obvious plot holes and the reasons that make it so what it is until actually kind of recently having the opportunity to dive into it a little deeper. So
you're welcome for that, by the way. I appreciate the opportunity. Okay. How about you, Aaron? What point in your life did Rocky V enter?
So, I can't honestly remember the first time I saw a Rocky movie. I know it was, it was such a huge part of the social consciousness of the 80s. I'm sure I saw them in the 80s, but the first one I remember watching was Rocky IV, and I probably watched that like 15, 16 times in high school, because I had a friend who, like, every time we got together, we'd just throw on Rocky IV. And I'd never seen Rocky V. Like, I can vaguely remember seeing the other ones, but then it was actually 4th of July weekend, when you and I were college roommates, we sat down and watched the entire Rocky series. And that was the first time I saw Rocky V, was on 4th of July, which is how you should celebrate 4th of July, is watching, going from Rocky IV, which is like one of the most idiotically patriotic movies of all time, to then seeing that great hero be just destroyed in every possible way. And it's like, I remember at the time thinking, why did they even make this movie? It's like, the previous four are on this clear trajectory of like Rocky becoming a messiah. You know what I mean? It's like he goes from like being a boxing champion to saving, ending the Cold War. The next step should have been like Rocky stops an alien invasion or something, but they completely roll it backwards, and it just made no sense to me whatsoever.
So I had an interesting journey with Rocky in terms of, because I grew up the same era, and you couldn't escape like Rocky IV or III on cable. Mm-hmm. But then when Rocky V came out, you also couldn't escape that. Like, it was played so much that I'm pretty sure, and there was a point in my life where I'd seen Rocky V more than I had seen the original Rocky. it's taken me multiple years to correct that mistake. But luckily I'm over that. But I do say every once in a while, I will do a rewatch of the series, and it's always that, okay, do I watch Rocky V or can we just skip it? And no, you got to skip it. You got it. Like we'll I know we'll get to our guilt meter later, but you know, it's, you know, if you've seen it once, it's pretty, it's, you get it. But yeah, I'm kind of like you, John, watching it again this time, and, you know, kind of giving it my full attention. There are lots of things that we can talk about. But let's dive into the premise of it, Aaron, because I think you hit on maybe the thing that right off the bat just stands out from the rest of the series. Because you're right, there is this trajectory of Rocky just going and becoming like this folk hero. And then within the first 10 minutes of the film, it is all taken away.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to lie, on paper, I don't hate that choice. I don't hate the choice of, oh, he's got to go back to his roots. He's got to like go back to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And his old neighborhood.
I don't hate the idea of like him going back. What didn't make sense to me is it's like he stepped in a time machine. Like, you know what I mean? Like he doesn't just go back home. He literally goes back to his home, you know, like his old house in Philadelphia. And the decoration is the same. Like, wouldn't someone else have moved in there? There's the same television set, the same furniture, the TV set. It's like a 70s television set. It's 1990. This isn't like Back to the Future with Rocky in it. Like, it's preposterous. Like, if he went back to Philadelphia and had to, like, get in touch with, like, who he was as a boxer, that's one thing. But it was, to me, the what makes it so irritating is that it's just blatantly nostalgia porn. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, look. You remember this thing from the first Rocky. You remember this little, you know, part of the neighborhood or what. It's just totally playing on like trying to go back to the original movie. Mm-hmm. And it makes it just sad because it's like, this isn't Rocky One. And now not only are you making a bad Rocky movie, but you're almost kind of contaminating the original Rocky movie, which was actually a really great movie, you know? So it made me sad more than anything.
Yeah, and the thing about that too is he regresses completely to the original Rocky character because he not only like he wears down to the same clothes.
Which
is hilarious when you think about it, because in the first Rocky, he's like kind of this like kind of thick, like rough guy, and he just gets like progressively more lean and jacked as the film franchise goes on, but clothes still fit him like a glove,
right?
Like that jacket fits now, everything, like it, like he's like, oh, I just found all this stuff, to the point too where he even reverts to his original speech pattern.
Yeah.
Like he's back to talking like the stereotype that he kind of is in the first movie, which was the point that he's like some bum that, you know, but like by Rocky IV, he's like speaking in complete sentences. He is like talking, like he's got that same kind of like Rocky isms, but like he's still very much like he's a more educated Rocky. And like by the time he gets home, he's just like, no, oh, well, I guess I'm back to this. I can go back to the old, you know, like weird Pacino-esque 1970s style talk that I used to do.
Yeah, it's he ends up coming across like someone trying to do a Rocky impersonation instead of being Rocky. You know what I mean? Like he's not acting the part, he's just impersonating himself acting the part.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other way in which he regresses in Rocky V is he lets Adrian push him around and tell him what to do every step of the way. Normally, like her character is always Rocky, Rocky. At this point, when I was watching it again, I was starting to get kind of upset with her about this, because here they are, completely broke. He can find, you know, some tomato cans to punch up, you know, for a little bit. No, he's been at this for however many years, and now all of a sudden you're worried about his health and not going to let him box. Right. And it just, it kind of wore on me a little bit.
Well, that's, yeah. And that's the big plot point we haven't discussed yet. Rocky has brain damage.
in this movie.
He had brain damage for a while.
And it's revealed he had not. So not only does he lose like all of his money, but he's forced into retirement, basically like severe brain trauma, like in generic Hollywood doctor-y terms. It's like, yeah, you've taken a lot of shots to the head. And it's like, basically it would, you know, if it were set today, they'd be like, oh, you've got like, you know, signs of CTE or something like that. That you'd be like, okay. But like, it's so like vague that we're like, eh, really? I mean, granted, the dude fought in I don't know how many fights and only ever put his hands up, I think, like twice in a fight. So, like, that tracks. That idea, like, really tracks. But it's, like, again, as you pointed out, Aaron, it's just, like, how, like, sad can we make Rocky? How much of a sad, pathetic character can we make him? And so, yeah, not only is he broke, but he's brain damaged as well.
I felt like the brain damage thing was almost like Stallone trying to like retcon in the fact that, you know, Rocky somehow has this impervious head. Like if you watch real boxing, like if a boxer takes two or three solid punches to the head, more often than not, they're going down. Rocky, his head is like a speed bag. You hit that thing and it just pops forward over and over and over again. I mean, at the beginning of this movie, they show the Ivan Drago fight.
Yeah.
In just the clips they show of it, he probably takes like 50 punches directly to the face. So, you know, the idea that he has brain damage, the guy should be brain dead. Yeah. I mean, he should, there shouldn't be a functioning brain in there at all anymore.
I had such a visceral reaction to that montage in the beginning because they really did take, because that fight in Rocky IV takes like a half hour, but they literally said, okay, we're only going to show the shots to the head. Yeah. And so there's like three solid minutes of Rocky just getting just blow after blow to the head. And we're all way more educated now, you know, in 2020 about head trauma. And I'm just like, oh, it was like watching a snuff film. Right. and it's sadly, it's one of the highlights of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. The best part of Rocky V is the clip of Rocky IV they show at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it does set up pretty well, which is part of the tragedy of the movie, because the first 10 minutes are legitimately a good setup. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, him, you know, in the showers. First of all, I had completely forgotten you see Stallone putting your ass in this
one. Yeah. That is the first frame of new footage, by the way. It's naked. It's all Rocky IV highlights to the credits. And the first, that's Stallone, because this is like, you know him. He's like, okay, what's the first thing we need the audience to see to bring us into this story? I know, naked Rocky in the shower. Because he's got to remind you, and honestly, I believe that's 100% choice on Stallone, because Rocky doesn't have a boxing match in this, so there's never a point for him to have his shirt off and show how jacked he is.
Yeah.
That's the only reason that shot exists, because he's like, hey, I want people to know, you know, I'm not going to fight in this movie, but I'm still ripped. I can still get it.
Nope. It starts off well, but it just kind of goes downhill from there.
Yeah, because yeah, like we said, everything. If you said, okay, here's the plot of Rocky V. We're gonna go back to the grittier tone, because as you said, Aaron, you know, Rocky IV is a glorified cartoon. It is a musical. It's great. Don't get me wrong. It is wonderful. But they're like, okay, we're gonna try to get back to that more serious tone of the first movie. And so, okay, what would be serious? Rocky having to start from scratch. Rocky not being able to fight anymore. You know, all of those things sound good in principle. And then we get like 11 minutes into the movie and it just all goes downhill.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting to me about the Rocky franchise is Rocky 1 and Rocky 4, if you watch them back to back, they're so ridiculously different in tone and filmmaking style. But yet, like, they're both, great movies in and of themselves, you know? So it's like Rocky can be flexible. It can be those things. And I don't think anyone would have been turned off by the idea of going back to like the Rocky One style. It's just, it's such a shadow of that original movie. It's, mm-hmm. it doesn't have any of the heart, any of the, you know, like the storytelling nuance. It's the most ham-fisted approach possible, yeah. you know?
Well, and I've always said that the Rocky franchise, more than anything, because Stallone has had this huge career, but the trajectory of his career, the story of his career lines up so evenly with the story of Rocky. Because really, Rocky IV, he's at the height of his powers. He's like the biggest star in the world. He has that, and Rambo are big hits. But then like this comes out in 1990. This is the beginning of it's a time for Mr. Stallone, because we're about to enter the Stop or My Mom Will Shoot era. Oscar comes out. He's trying some new things. Like he wants to show he can do more than be the action movie guy. And boy, howdy, does it not go well. So you're right there, because it's a guy who had it in him to do a really kind of gritty indie style film. Only now 15 years later, he's like one of the biggest stars in Hollywood and a multimillionaire. And so maybe he just doesn't quite have his finger on the pulse.
Yeah. It's the same problem with like George Lucas and the Star Wars movies. You know, like when he was making the original trilogy, he was just doing this like cool thing that he was passionate about. And then it became this whole like cult, you know, it like there are literally people who are like Jedi is their religion. And same thing with Rocky. It's like it started off as just this kind of quirky, gritty sports movie that turned into like a cultural phenomenon. And once that happens, you can't turn the dial back. You know, you can never take the cultural phenomenon and go back to being the gritty kind of indie thing that you can't manufacture that. You know, it's a one-way process.
Right. And it actually wouldn't happen till later in 2006. He comes back and does Rocky Balboa. But that was after his career had basically bottomed out. Like he had, you know, the 90s are kind of up and down for him, but the 2000s are just a mess. He's doing like direct to DVD stuff in 2000. And he's like, you know what? Maybe I just need to do, but I got to go back. I got to go back. And like Rocky Balboa, interestingly enough, not only has it has a lot of the same plot points as Rocky V, which is basically Stallone saying, I don't ever want you to see Five, like Lucas and the Star Wars Christmas special. He's right. Like, I would bury this copy if I could. Because Rocky Five is him in the streets of Philadelphia, living day to day, having problems with his son, you know, desire to get that one last fight, you know, and so there's like this, like, there's connective tissue there, but he actually has, you know, maybe a little more age and he's come down to earth to actually pull it off.
Yeah, and I think that's also what makes watching Rocky V so much worse now, is now that Rocky Balboa has come out, like, you're like, oh, that's what this movie should have been in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't, Rocky V never needed to happen. You could have just gone straight to Rocky Balboa.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, part of it is they kind of had to explain away, though, because Rocky Balboa, part of what made it work is, you know, Stallone was aging, and you know, he was back to that gritty character, but there had to be that leap from riches, being wealthy and famous, to being there. And Rocky V just completely screwed the pooch on this completely nonsensical string of events that led to this happening.
So is this like one long con of Stallone? Where he's like, I'm going to just make a really shitty movie. And everyone's going to hate it, so we can bottom out the character only to like raise him up, you know, 15 years later. Is this a long con by Stallone? Is that your suggestion, John?
It's certainly possible, because nobody could have written that and been okay with it. Because to recap, basically what happens is Rocky's accountant spend 6 years or something investing in bad real estate deals that all happen to, you know, fall flat. No one tells the Balboa State any of this throughout the 6 years it's going on. The biggest part of this that makes it make no sense is the person who signs over the power of attorney to allow all this to happen is not Rocky. It's not Adrian. It's Paulie. Now, I don't know a whole lot about contract law, but I'm pretty sure that allowing your dopey brother-in-law to have, you know, the run of the farm to do whatever he wants, that's not going to hold a lot of water. So instead of, you know, people pushing Rocky to get in the ring for one more fight, no one once said, hey, why don't you take this thing to court and get your money back?
Yeah, that's what we needed. We needed a lot, a Rocky legal drama.
Yeah, I think that's what we were all hoping it was going to be. When I was watching it, I was hoping for a few good men with Rocky in it, you know.
Right.
Exactly. You know, that's deep accounting principles. lots of paper trails to follow. Sign me up.
And for Paulie, absolutely nothing happens to him until he gets cold cocked by Tommy Gunn at the end of the movie, which frankly he deserved for causing the whole thing in the first place.
He's the one that foist Tommy on Rocky in the first place.
And then when
Tommy turns out to be a jerk, he's like, I should have told you that guy was no good. I was like, I love Polly growing up. Polly's the character I've like turned around the most in my years. Cause I'm like, man, like so much of like, Rocky's life could be so much happier if Polly was not around.
Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Polly is a dirtbag. Really. When you watch a movie, like the guy loses their fortune and then just lives off of them, even though now they're completely destitute. He's sitting there swilling alcohol and smoking cigars in their house that they have to live in because he's like, you know, giving away all their money. And then, you know, he lines up this whole deal with Tommy Gunn. The thing that was interesting to me watching it now is Polly is really the antagonist of this movie. I know they're trying to make the Don King character the antagonist, but that character was really trying to help Rocky the whole time. You know, like he's like, hey, I'll make this deal for you and get you some money. What did Polly ever do for Rocky? He didn't help him get deals. No, he gave away his fortune.
No. Yeah, honestly, it really is because the worst thing that happens to Rocky in this whole movie happens off screen because of Polly.
Right.
Like the inciting incident is something that we don't even get to see. We just show up and it's like, oh, the money's all gone. Which also, by the way, that apparently happens while they're off in Russia. How long were they in Russia?
Right. Yeah.
Because first of all, like the fight is on, like, okay, there's so many problems that just stem from the idea that in Rocky IV, he fights Drago on Christmas Eve. Because first and foremost, no accountant's working on Christmas.
Right.
So he's losing his fortune around the holidays. Probably. Yeah. First of all, I'm calling BS on that. Second of all, he comes back and his son has gone from 9 to 14.
Right.
And then thirdly, when we get another Christmas scene later in the movie, by that point in the film, Tommy Gunn has gone 22-0 in 1 year.
Right.
The man has fought 22 professional boxing matches in a year.
Yeah, talk about brain damage.
Good Lord. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry for expecting a little bit of continuity here in my Rocky franchise, but it's like all of that stuff happens and it's just like without any real layout there. I think you're both right though. Paulie's to blame for everything. And I didn't even think about that they lose everything and Paulie's still sponging off the nothing that they're making now. Because Adrian goes back to the pet store. Rocky reopens Mickey's gym and his training. And that's, of course, where we are introduced to Tommy Gunn, who we're supposed to believe is the villain of the film. Right. Interestingly enough, he doesn't show up to like, oh, I forgot about this. He doesn't show up to almost like halfway through the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like so much of the first half of the movie is just like Rocky and his family, like being sad because they lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
And then being sad because his brain is done.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, it's like I kept wondering, like, what's the conflict here that somehow like Rocky is supposed to resolve? Because it annoyed me. It's like every time an opportunity would show up for him to do something about their money problem, he'd be like, no, that's not who I am now. It's like, so you can't train someone because you got brain damage? Like, yeah, you're a boxing guy. Like, why can't you be a trainer? It didn't make any sense to me.
And not only that, you're the greatest boxer that ever lived.
Right. Yeah.
Like he's legit. Like if Rocky Balboa was a real person, he would be hands down the greatest boxer of all time. He went to Russia and defeated a 300-pound guy that had like 2 feet on him.
Right. Well, and the whole thing too is like, they make it out like he's not making any money as like Tommy Gunn's manager. But then they show like Tommy Gunn has like matches at Caesar's Palace. Like, I guarantee there was some sort of purse for that. That was, you know, had to be at least six figures. And, and out of just pure interest, I went and looked to see like, what does a manager get? Like they get a 25% cut. So it's not like he's having to live off of scraps, and yet they cut back and he's still in like his hovel in like, you know, the crappy part of Philadelphia. It didn't make any sense to me.
Well, in Rocky II, he's, you know, waddling out of the hospital and these two people come up to just basically throw these advertising and all these sort of endorsement deals at him. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me that in Rocky V, the same opportunities wouldn't be available to him.
Well, and they try to explain that off in that like exposition heavy scene where they're basically like, any reasonable thing that you think he could do to get himself out, he can't do it. Right. Because they're like, he's like, you can't do commercials because of all the scandal around his, he's the victim.
Yeah.
And he can't do it because of that. And then they're like, well, also because of his past, like from the first movie. And I was like, wait a minute. First of all, that's like 20 years ago. And second of all, if there's one thing that we know is that criminal records for professional athletes, not a deal breaker.
Yeah. Well, and like his whole thing of like, oh, Adrian, I'm not a spokesperson. I can't be doing that. It's like, dude, just stand in front of a camera with like an American flag and have your picture taken holding like Cocoa Puffs or whatever, you know, like the guy could make some money somewhere, you know, it's just, yeah, it's such a preposterous premise.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that actually would kind of be an interesting, again, that's another interesting avenue you could go down, the different things that Rocky would have to do to try to earn money. Like, you know, doing those like cheesy, like signings or whatever, like get like public appearances, cutting ribbons at like a supermarket or something.
Yeah. Like, and that make a really great finale for a boxing franchise. It's like, you know, the fifth movie denouement of watching this old decrepit poor boxer having to pour himself out for mortgage, you know, back payments.
Fair point. I mean, I'm just saying it. I mean, is it worse with that? Is that worse than what we got?
No, sadly, that would actually make a better plot than the one we watched.
Yeah. Because the other thing about it, too, is like all of these things that we're saying, listener, if you haven't seen this movie and you're like, well, I mean, I kind of feel bad that all this stuff is happening to Rocky. You should also know that the film goes out of its way to make Rocky an asshole.
Yeah.
Which is maybe the biggest sin of the movie. Is that like, okay, he's got to fight out of all this, these different things that happen. But Rocky himself becomes a deadbeat dad. Because as he's developing this relationship with Tommy Gunn, played by Tommy Morrison, in a real Tony Danza-esque situation there, where he can only play guys named Tony, he's, as he's training, he almost immediately becomes more interested in Tommy Gunn than he does his son. Yeah. Like he's like he and after like he sees Tommy Gunn in a sparring session and Tommy goes ham on some dude from the sparring where he's like he's giving him brain damage.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, I don't want anything to do with you. You're a trained killer, basically. And then they meet afterwards and he's like, please. And he's like, okay, fine, whatever. and then 2 hours later, it's like, hey, why don't you stay with us and move in? And I'm going to kick my son out of his room.
You can stay with my jackass brother-in-law, Paulie. who asks Rocky Jr., if his pipes leak.
great dialogue.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, that's honestly, on the scale of problematic things Paulie has said in the franchise, and I don't know if it's top five, but yeah. So as they're moving, so yeah, and if you look at it from like Rocky Jr.'s perspective, this is like awful because he's lost, like they have to move to Philly, to Downton, you know, like the slums of Philly, I guess, is the way that it's like portrayed. So he has no friends. He goes to this new school. He gets the shit kicked out of him like the first day, and mugged. And then his like dad immediately is like, "Oh yeah, that sucks. Hey Tommy, why don't you show me all this stuff?" And then like as he gets better and improves in his boxing, like Rocky's not. He's nonplussed by all this. He can't be bothered. And he's just like, so in Rocky Jr., he's like, he's lost his friends. He's lost his house. He's lost his family. He's getting his ass kicked every day. Hey, he's the protagonist of this movie. Am I wrong?
No. Actually, that's exactly what I felt is like the only person I really empathized with was Rocky Jr. Because you know, all the rest of these people actually are kind of their own worst enemy. This kid is the only person who is like actually trying to be a good person. And he's, you know, he's like educating himself. His dad won't pay attention to him. He's getting his butt kicked at school. And the thing that I think is really bizarre about this movie is that it seems to send the message of like, well, if you know, you're down on your luck, best thing to do is start throwing punches, you know, like, cause that's mm-hmm. basically how the two main conflicts of the movie get resolved. You know, Rocky Jr. ends up eventually training himself with deadbeat Polly so that he can beat up his bullies. And that fixes his problem essentially. And then at the end of the movie, Rocky, after denying, like, you know, I'm not going to fight for money. I'm not going to, you know, do that. He ends up in a street fight, still getting, you know, his head bashed in, but he's not getting paid for it. But somehow that's supposed to be like the happy ending is like, oh, he finally got up and fought. But now, like, you know, he's still going to have horrible brain trauma and he's not making money from it. And he like punched the Don King character. So what little he does have, he's going to be sued into oblivion. Mm-hmm. And yet we're like happy because it's like, well, Rocky punched himself into victory. You know, I don't understand the messaging of this film at all.
It really, that it's such an odd thing. Well, and so here's the cherry on top of that or the silver lining, however you look, it actually could have been worse. Because the original ending of this film is that there were two different endings to this film. The first ending that Stallone had, one ending that Stallone had gone with was going to be in a mirror of him learning from his son the way, you know, the son beats up his bully, but then he extends the hand and they, you know, become friends. And now like the bully's part of like his crew mm-hmm. for the rest of the movie. He was going to, you know, beat up Tommy, extend his hand, and, like, Tommy was going to, like, apologize, and they were going to reconcile. That's one. The other alternative was Rocky was going to die.
Yeah, I read this. Yeah.
He was supposed to win the fight, but be so injured, as you pointed out, Aaron, that he was going to die in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. Off screen. and that we were going to conclude with the monologue about Adrian telling the world that Rocky has died, but his fighting spirit will live on.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things that killed me about the final scene was that, like, you know, she's like smiling and happily embracing him after he, you know, beat up Tommy Gunn in the streets. It's like, you know, the whole time she's been like worried and mad at him for wanting to go back to fighting. And here he goes out of his way, starts a fight with this guy, or doesn't start a fight, but, you know, ends the fight with this guy. And she's like happy and like giving him hugs. And so that made no sense to me. But in my mind, like after I read that alternate ending where he dies, what I choose to believe about Rocky V is that he does die, and that like moment at the end where he like sees the ghost of Mickey. Yes. That's like him actually dying, and you know, the rest is just like a fever dream as he's like slowly passing away.
The like, we are dancing around this so much, but we're really, I don't know, maybe it's because Easter is coming on, but we're really turning in this into a Jesus analogy, aren't we?
Yes.
Like, yeah. We really are talking about him, you know, him being betrayed and dying and resurrecting at this point.
Well, if you want to bring a little bit of religion into this.
Sure.
So the fight scene lasts, it's about 7 minutes long. Okay, so mm-hmm. it's a 7 minute fight scene. Mm-hmm. Now, about 30 seconds into the fight scene, kind of relying on self-defense kind of goes out the window. So basically, it's two guys actively involved in a fight that is being broadcast on live TV and being surrounded by everybody in Philadelphia. At the end of the fight, Tommy Gunn gets led away in handcuffs, whereas Rocky, not only does he get cheered by everybody around, the priest shows up and gives him a blessing for him.
Yeah.
So it's really a miscarriage of justice.
It really, yeah. What did Tommy do?
Yeah.
Tommy's biggest crime is punching Polly, which, come on.
Polly was asking for it.
Polly's been asking for it for five goddamn movies. So, like
even if, like, you know, he gets hauled away for punching Polly, like, Rocky punched the Don King guy, whatever his name, George Washington Duke. He punched him. Like, shouldn't he get handcuffed for that?
Yeah, and punches him in the stomach in a way that sends him upwards on an upward trajectory, flying onto the hood of a car.
Right.
That's how physics works.
You know. Yeah, it is. There's some internal bleeding there for certain. Yeah, I mean, how is Rocky not in jail on assault charges?
Yeah,
he's
Rocky. Like,
so is that like Philadelphia rules that it's like, okay, whoever loses the fight, you're the one to blame, so you get to go to jail.
That could be. Although Tommy's from Oklahoma, right? Is that the story?
Yeah, so, yeah, he's so, yeah.
Not a native son, so.
And he wouldn't have known that. So right, yeah. He wouldn't have known, hey, you know, Philly street fight rules, loser goes to jail.
Yep. Well, that's, again, you know, Sylvester Stallone's incredible detail work in the writing, just knowing all of those intricacies of how Philadelphia actually works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie does make Philly look bad for the first time. Every, like, all the other times, it's like a love letter to the city because it's just all these, you know, he's so tied in with that city. But yeah, but at this point, like, everyone in Philly is just kind of a dirtbag at this point.
Well, and how rough are the public schools?
Ooh. I mean, you get beat up the minute you walk onto the playground there.
Well, and speaking of rough public schools and playgrounds, why is the door to the public school just a hole in the chain link fence? Like, that's just like the standard door that they go in. All these kids going in and out of they can't even afford like a small gap in a chain link fence that's actually supposed to be there. Hey.
Walking in through the openings of a fence is just for suckers, Aaron. Come on. Everyone knows that. You know, some of us were born on the streets and raised there. We know you just, you know, if you got the door or you got the uncut jagged hole, you take the hole every time.
Speaking of the mean streets of Philly, one of the things that I really loved about the realism of this movie is the use of early 90s Philly hip-hop. Hip hop. I thought that was just great. It really, it brought such complexity to those scenes when it had that cheesy synth hip hop.
Oh yeah. I mean, not for nothing. This is Stallone so trying to like fit in with the culture at the time and just whiffing as hard as he could. Cause he's like, oh, that rap's real popular. No, granted, we're a little before gangster rap, but like he picks like this, like the like faux toughest rappers.
Oh yeah.
To do the rap. I mean, at one point, and I did not realize, I was like, oh, this sounds like Snap. This sounds like The Power. And then I realized that song was by Snap. I'm like, oh, no wonder it sounds like them. They had nothing else to do. But yeah, it's the weirdest thing because yeah, it's like not like it's not even good rap. It's not good hip hop. It's not tough. It's like it's very odd.
Yeah, yeah. It's the kind of hip hop that like people on Sesame Street would break dance to, you know what I mean? Like it's very, very tame, you know?
Yeah. It's like if your parents, you know, you asked your parents to get you like a Naughty by Nature album for your birthday and they come back with Tag Team.
Right.
That's what it is. It's like, here, I heard these guys are pretty good too. How about that? You know, it's rap, right? And I'm like, right. No, yeah, technically, yes, it is. But a little bit of a difference. Exactly. And then, so I mean, where you're talking about the soundtrack, then I got to bring this up to tie this beautiful soundtrack in. You know, we've been subjected to early 90s hip hop for the whole film. So what do we get to close out the film? Elton John.
I thought that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. The Measure of a Man, which is played over a montage of scenes from the entire series of the film. Which again, if you stay through the end, you'll finally get to Rocky V. But you get to I get to be reminded of all the good Rocky movies,
yeah.
Which I'm sure had to like sit in the craw of people who like paid to see this in a theater. Yeah. They're like, that's what I wanted. Yeah. I wanted one of those. Mm-hmm. I had to sit through some bullshit Tommy Gunn, and now I'm listening to an Elton John song written by Alan Menken, who once again. When you need a stirring sports anthem, you go to Alan Menken.
Yeah, it was just, it's like everything about the movie is just so horribly misaimed, you know, like they just, their heart was in the right place, but the execution was just so far off.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, what else? Any other scenes or moments? I've got a couple of notes myself. Any scenes or moments that stick out to you that we haven't touched on yet? Because I got a couple and then we'll move on to trivia. But John, is there anything that springs to mind that we haven't talked about yet?
No, I mean, I think we covered most of it. I do appreciate the homage to obviously what he learned from wrestling Thunderlips in Rocky III. With the sweet drop toe hold, really turned the course of the fight there from a pure boxing match to just a street fight, which mm-hmm. is what Rocky is, a street fighter.
That is true, and you know you were not wrong by pointing out the pro wrestling connection because the final fight scene was partly choreographed by pro wrestling legend Terry Funk.
Really?
Yes. So yeah. Stallone had a weird thing for Terry Funk. He showed up because he shows up at like as a goon in Tango and Cash, and he's in a couple of other things. And I know he's in Roadhouse. I know Stallone's not in Roadhouse, but like Terry Funk had a weird moment in the late 80s, early 90s where they're like, he was like a consultant on some action movies. But yes, yeah, he's probably the one that taught, you know, he's like, you gotta come on, Stallone, you gotta do drop toe hold and then leg sweep him.
It works.
Yeah, but yeah, it's such an odd choice because that's the other thing is they have to have Rocky fight. It's a Rocky movie, and their choice is, well, instead of him like acquiescing and deciding he's gonna fight this fight, he like they just kind of yada yada the feud between him and Tommy. Because that doesn't even like the breakup between them like happens in like the last 20 minutes of the movie too. It's like, oh, we've broken up. Oh, I've been a bad dad. Oh, Tommy wins the heavyweight title. Oh, he challenges me to a fight. Roll credits.
Yeah. Well, and touching on the bad dad thing, like one of the scenes that I found really deeply touching was his time, like where he finally admits to his son that he's been a bad dad. And somehow his son goes from like being this like, you know, little punk to being his sweet son just by like a 5-minute conversation, mm-hmm. because that's how teenage kids are. You know, all you have to do is ramble at them mindlessly for 5 minutes and they completely change their ways. That's what I find with my own kids.
And oddly go in to try to either whisper in their ear or kiss him.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of dad kissing, which, you know, whatever, it's affection is fine, but it got a little weird. A couple times
it got real weird because like he goes into like was like using I couldn't tell if he was trying to whisper something to him or go in to try to like kiss him on the cheek only to have the son like pull away, and I'm like, either one is an odd choice,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And not to say one can't be affectionate with their son, and obviously there's, you know, there's the real life parallels of that Stallone's son playing Rocky's son, but it's a very like full end of Full House-esque moment.
Oh yeah, it kind of mimicked the storytelling of the time where it's like all parental and child problems could be solved with a 2-minute conversation to cheesy music sitting at the end of your kid's bed. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like that's kind of the way the world worked in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it goes one further back because that conversation is only spurred on by the short conversation that he has with Adrian, where Adrian finally points out, hey, your son hates you. And he's like, he does? Oh, well, I better go fix that. He goes and fixes it. And then it's done.
Yeah.
The son's back to being like, oh yeah, you're my dad again. Okay.
Which is how it works out in real life all the time, you know.
Absolutely. People forgive, you know, the emotional scars and damages that their parents do to them all the time for no like real, you know, no real strife. They just have to, they just figure that out. There's the other odd moment you were talking about him and his son. Like, okay, so I get that Stallone is obviously going to want to like remind you about how fit he is and how much he can get it. But something rang really odd to me this time about the line where the girl talks about Rocky Jr.'s butt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And knowing that Stallone wrote this and knowing that Stallone was going to have his son play his son.
Right.
Like, is he sitting at a typewriter thinking, oh, this ought to be a good idea. Yeah. Have him talk about his butt. Yeah. He's even got to let the audience know, hey, even my kid can get it. I got good genes. Like, it's such an odd line to write about your son. I don't know.
Yeah. No, there was a lot of stuff like that where I felt like, do we really need this in this movie right now? I don't know. There's just...
Or like the joke where he tells Adrian he's going to violate her like a parking meter.
Yeah, that was another one. The other part that I felt got a little awkward and weird and did not register properly emotionally from the people who shared that scene was when Tommy Gunn was going into detail about how his alcoholic father used to beat him and his mother. And that his first knockout was his own father. And everyone's like, oh, well, that's nice. Pass the, you know, the ham. It's like, what is going on in this scene?
Man, Tommy Gunn really is a tragic hero, isn't he?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Let's trace this. Okay. So he's got an alcoholic dad who beats him up. He fights his way out of that. He goes to Oklahoma. He searches for his hero, who's a dick to him the first time they meet. But he persists, he gets trained, he becomes like the boxer he's supposed to be. Rocky's still hem-hawing about the title stuff, but he's still kind of fragile and easily manipulated, so he gets manipulated by this promoter. he gets shown all this cash and he goes down like a wrong path, much like kind of like Rocky does in his own life. Like Rocky becomes a deadbeat, you know, gets obsessed with money and fame and fortune too. And then for his, so when like he confronts Rocky, Rocky doesn't show him, like, he shows him like compassion for a moment, but the minute he lashes out at his racist brother-in-law, he's like, oh, now I've got to beat you to near death. And then he gets arrested for his troubles.
Yep.
Justice for Tommy, man.
Right.
And one of the parts that really didn't make sense to me about the whole Tommy arc is there's a part where Rocky is like trying to convince Tommy that, you know, boxing isn't all about the money. And I'm like, what else is it about then? Like, why else would you be punishing yourself and letting someone pummel you in the face over and over if not for the money? Like, are you doing it just for the love of brain damage? I don't get it.
Well, and it's such a sanctimonious thing. If you know anything about the history of Rocky, in the first one, he says he boxes because he can't sing or dance because that's all he knows how to do. The second movie, he straight up takes the rematch because he needs money.
Right.
He's broke. He want, like, Apollo goads him into a rematch and he like takes because he's got no other options because his wife's in a coma. Like, yeah, exactly. And then the third one, he's going on the Muppet Show, he's buying Ferraris, like he's living like by the fourth, he's got a goddamn robot. He's not doing any of this for the love of the game. And yeah, Rocky was enjoying the spoils too, and now like that his protege wants to make some money at this? Like, come on, Rocky. I love you, but come on.
Yeah. Keep this it real, Rocky.
Cathartic relationship or discussion, because it's clear there are only really two heroes in this movie, Rocky Jr. and Tommy Gunn.
Yeah.
Everybody else can just go to hell.
Honestly, I'm doing a 180 on all of this. I think we're unearthing some stuff here.
And I think the real underlying message, to go back to me, like the moral of this story is you punch your way out of your problems. Because it's like Tommy Gunn beats up his abusive father. You know, Rocky beats up Tommy Gunn at the end and everyone cheers him on. I think really what should have happened is Rocky Jr. should have beaten up Rocky. Like that should have been a scene in this movie. That would have made a lot more sense if Rocky was like, hey, you know, I'm trying to not be your deadbeat dad anymore. Mm-hmm. And then Rocky Jr. just pops him off one, you know, like that's how that scene should have gone.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they tell him in the beginning that we're trying to teach our son to not solve his problems with violence. And yet when he beats up the bullies, everyone seems cool with it.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, well, oh,
there's no negative repercussions.
Cause here's the thing. It's okay to fight your way out of a problem as long as you win.
Right.
That's the real message of this. Yeah. like, do your best to get out of a problem. And if you're going to fight your way out, you better win because otherwise all the shit's just going to be heaped on you.
Right, right. That's why Tommy Gunn actually is not the protagonist, is because he's a loser. At the end, he loses. And that's why we shouldn't like him.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't really have any reason not to like Tommy other than the fact that like he becomes like he's kind of a dick for about 10 minutes in the movie.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Rocky's a dick the whole movie.
Oh, yeah. Right. Well, and that's the thing is I don't know if they're trying to make him like unlikable at the beginning because he's like, you know, a vicious guy in that first sparring match he has, but it does really sell it for me. You know what I mean? Like he's not like some awful, like Ivan Drago character where he's like, you know, killing people in the ring. He's just, you know, he gets a little, excited. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually very excited to watch this movie again now from this perspective. Okay, so a couple of other things I want to bring up. So we talked a little bit about how a lot of things come out of nowhere in this movie. One of the things that bugged me about this movie is that it's the fifth movie, and so these characters have all this history and that we know about, but they do this thing where they have to invent a couple of things. And so first of all, we talk about Burgess Meredith coming back. there's this whole subplot involving the boxing glove necklace that Rocky has, which has not been mentioned for the series of the film. We're on the fifth one, and it's apparently like Rocky's most prized possession.
Yeah, that made no sense for me. Where did that come from? And it actually was to the point where I'm like, I must have missed something in one of the earlier films because they make such a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm. Someone pointed out that he is seen wearing it in earlier films, but it's never mentioned. And that scene, that obviously is a completely made up scene. That scene is not from the first Rocky. It's just this whole, it's just a reason to shoehorn in a Burgess Meredith cameo. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't figure they'd go past Rocky III so they could kill him then. And then afterwards, like, oh, well, now we have Rocky movies without Mickey. So maybe we'll get him back for this last one. Yeah, that one makes no sense. And then Rocky, like, doing magic tricks is like this kind of ingratiating thing, which everyone's like acts like it's a thing that he does, even though he's never done any of the films beforehand.
Yeah, that was one of the bizarrest things about this movie is suddenly this brain-damaged boxer now is aspiring to be a magician. Where did this come from? He's always pulling shit out of people's ears. This was a brand new thing in this movie. It made no sense to me at all. And it also, it was so weirdly placed in the movie. It's like happens like three times in the first 15 minutes of the film and then doesn't happen again. And then it comes up in like the last scene. It's
Well, I mean, when he was in Russia, you know, he was training, obviously tanning a lot. He had to rest the hour, so maybe he picked up some magic tricks.
Yeah. Well, he was just in a cabin in Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, what else is he going to do? He could only play so many rounds of chess with Duke.
That's right.
By the way, like, disappears from the movie entirely after his, like, 10-second cameo in the beginning.
Yeah.
And I know he doesn't probably fit into the story of the Philadelphia, but it's like, come on, Duke's probably got some money saved up, or at least maybe like talk to like Apollo's family or something. I don't know. Rocky has access to like financial help.
Oh yeah.
Well, and the other thing that didn't make sense to me is like, are you telling me that like he had tons of stuff? I mean, he had Ferraris, he had that like sweet 1980s robot. Are you telling me that after selling all of that stuff, the best thing they can scrape together is a crummy row house in the rough part of Philadelphia? Mm-hmm. Like, how much does a Ferrari sell for? It's got to be worth something.
How much does, like, a robot that can speak and think and feel?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, we are cheated. I guarantee you, if there was a scene where they had to give up the robot, I would cry like a baby.
Yeah.
The moment they have to like haul the robot away. Like it's a child being taken away by DHS.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they missed out on the opportunity to emotionally develop Polly in that moment, because Polly has kind of a quasi love affair with the robot in Rocky IV.
Well, there's a quasi about it. He totally did that robot.
And now the robot's gone and he says nothing about it. He doesn't even care about the fate of his beloved robot. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. No.
Total plot hole.
Clearly the biggest sin of this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything good before we move on to some trivia? Anything about the movie that actually worked well for you? Anything that you like, John?
Anything I liked about it? Well, again, I mean, it started off pretty solid. You know, I like the premise. I like how they tied it in with Rocky IV. You know, and kind of showed, you know, despite the fact that, you know, he was taking a hot shower and I'm assuming all the vodka he could drink, he was still ice cold and couldn't get warm. I thought that was a good setup. But again, then it just sort of kind of fell off a cliff from there.
Yeah. And the symptoms of his brain trauma are very all over the place. Yeah. Like at the beginning, it's like, it feels like it's the beginning of like a Parkinson's thing, but it never comes back. Right. He apparently gets like flashes of light, like he's like John Travolta in Phenomenon or something. Like yeah. coming up, he like gets like, and that comes on at the weird minutes. And then, yeah, and then in the middle of getting his ass kicked in the street fight, he has like this, you know, fever dream.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. With Brent okay. Spears, who looks dead in that cameo.
He does look like a ghost. Yeah. Aaron, how about you? Anything that worked for you and that actually works for you in this movie?
I did not look up the gentleman's name, but the actor who plays George Washington Duke, that man chews up the scenery like no other in every single scene. That mm-hmm. guy is just acting his ass off in that yeah. movie. And so, I mean, my hat goes off to him. He tried to carry some of those scenes, but you know, you can only do so much.
Yeah, no, I would agree. We've hardly talked about that character, who I guess is maybe the real antagonist of the film, because he's the one who manipulates Tommy to get Rocky to fight, even though it's against Rocky's, you know, Rocky, we shouldn't. The thing is, it's a weird, again, it's an emotional conundrum for the audience, because we shouldn't want Rocky to fight if we care about him as a person, but it's a Rocky movie. Presumably we all showed up to see Rocky fight.
Right. Yeah.
So like the thing that you as an audience member paid a ticket for, you're told in the first 15 minutes, you should not want this.
Yeah.
Because this character that you've loved for two decades might die.
Well, and I think the thing that makes it really hard is exactly what you said. Like, that's the point of a Rocky movie, is to watch a guy fight, you know, like, and the other aspect is it would be different if it were like a documentary and it were a real person, but it's a fictional character. Like, it's a choice to give him brain damage. So like, you didn't need to make that dramatic choice, you know? So I found myself totally resenting the fact that they're like, oh, he could die. It's like, well, you didn't need to make that choice. Like, let me have what I want, which is Sylvester Stallone punching people and getting punched mercilessly in the face.
Yeah, you're almost making the repercussions. Yeah, you're almost making the audience feel bad for what they've watched previously.
Right, right, exactly.
Because it's like we all loved it when he went toe to toe with Drago and took, you know, 1,000 headshots. Like we, but then to be told, hey, that really messed him up. It's really kind of a mind F to the audience.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but that actor's name, by the way, that you were talking about is Richard Gant, who's a, you know, a pretty well-known character actor. Yeah, and I agree. He does a great job. And like, I appreciate you still referring to him as George Washington Duke, because we could just call him Don King.
Oh, yeah.
It is such a thinly veiled Don King-like character, which I'm fine with, by the way, because like Apollo Creed was based off of Muhammad Ali, and like he's pulling things, and Don King at the time was the biggest promoter in the world and was known for like having that kind of flashy persona, and also screwing boxers out of their money. So like all of that was fine. He's got a shot here. He's like, ooh, I'm kind of the villain of a Rocky movie. Like, and he's stepping up to the, he really does step up, I think.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He makes the most of every moment he's on screen.
Yeah. And I also think too, we talked about Adrian, kind of just being the naysayer of all naysayers in this movie, but God bless Talia Shire, because I do think she's actually putting in some work here, and she's really trying to make something out of nothing. Because I was like, you know, she's doing her best. She is fine in this movie. I think, like, and everybody knows they're like, Carl or Burt Young is, you know, Paulie's problematic, but you know, he's still Paulie. And aside from Stallone, like completely reverting back to his like 70s era Rocky, they all do fine. So it's not like aside from, you know, maybe Tommy Morrison, it's not a badly acted film.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt really bad for Talia Shire, 'cause I'm like, you know, you can tell she's trying. She's, you know, she's not phoning in the performance, but there's just nothing to work with there.
I mean, that's part of the problem is she puts in her character in the same emphasis, the same emotion as the other movies. The problem is it felt kind of out of place, especially at the end of Rocky V, because the movie was so craptastic. So she's doing her thing where she's, you know, Rocky, and she's worried about him and really pouring it all in. And just everything else about the movie doesn't lead up to that dramatic, like, crescendo that we all expect.
Right. Yeah, no. She thinks the movie that she's in is better than what it is.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. This, by the way, is the second. Talia Shire has a big year in 1990. She's in this and Godfather 3. They come out in this, like, within a month. So within a month, she gets to, like, reprise her two most famous roles in two incredibly lackluster sequels that also feature nepotism gone awry. Because you have Sage Stallone in this one, you have Sofia Coppola in Godfather 3, and it's like, man, poor Talia. Like, one of those. Like, if you'd have said, hey, we're gonna get another Rocky and another Godfather in the same year, you'd be like, okay, at least one of them has to be good.
Yeah, that really is. I would be curious to go back and look and see if there is another year with a more disappointing duo of anticipated movies than 1990. That's astounding.
Yeah. And within the span of a month, that was a brutal month, man. November to Thanksgiving to Christmas was kind of was bleak. Luckily, no wonder everybody went to see Home Alone.
Yeah.
Their other choices were Rocky V and Godfather 3.
Oh man, that is rough.
That's a rough month. Yeah, I mean,
say what you will about the coronavirus, but at least we don't have Rocky V and Godfather 3 to contend with.
Yeah, that was easily the worst month in American history. The worst 30-day span of American history when we got Rocky V and Godfather 3 in the same month. That should have closed the movie theaters.
Yeah. Yeah, should have been putting some social distancing in place for that one.
Oh boy. Yeah, so okay, so before we wrap up, just a couple of pieces of trivia. I mentioned the omitted scenes of Rocky dying. There's one other deleted scene that I got to bring up because, again, it makes this bleak movie even bleaker. And that is the character of Marie that he meets in the first film, the girl that he, like, tries to get away from the gangs and don't hang around and don't, and as he says, don't become a whore. Her character was shown in Rocky. There's a scene where she shows up in Rocky V where her character is shown to have ended up as a prostitute who was recently made homeless.
Okay.
as if this movie wasn't dark enough, there's going to be some scene that, hey, I may be brain damaged and broke and made a deadbeat dad, but I was right about that one.
So, well, you kind of get a feeling that, like, Sylvester Stallone was like, how can we take every single thing from the first movie and just make it go the absolute worst direction possible?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. And the other thing, which the last piece of trivia I'll do, and I think this speaks to the last thing we've talked about a couple of times already, which was, you know, John G. Avildsen comes back, and so you kind of expect the film to have that grittier tone. But one of the things that got pointed out in the filmmaking process was that the cinematographer actually is not the same as the first one. And so one of the things that Avildsen didn't like about the film was that he felt that the cinematographer of this film, Stephen Poster, was overlighting a lot of the scenes. And so it was negating the realism of the movie. It kind of had a brighter sheen to it than the grittier feel of the first film. And some of that has to do with lighting, which I'm not somebody who could sit in a movie and be like, oh, the lighting on that's really odd. But now you look at it and it's like, yeah, this looks like an independent movie script that was like shot like a major motion picture, like a, you know, some mainstream piece, and some of it, you know, a lot of that comes down to things like cinematography and lighting, which we don't talk about, I think, enough.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't have, like you said, I wouldn't have thought about it, but thinking back to it, yeah, it looked wrong. You know what I mean? Like it just looked weird. Like it didn't feel real. Felt more like a sitcom or something.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think part of it you attribute to just the time span. I mean, the first one was shot in 1976. And then you're thinking, well, 14 years have gone by, movie technology has advanced, so that's going to look different.
Sure. Yeah, and I think there's going to be some of that. And I think a lot of that just comes down to maybe don't try to make a gritty 70s style film in 1990.
Right. Yeah.
Which also ironically applies to Godfather 3 as well.
Very much. The similarities are astounding. Okay. So, I guess we'll, I hate to leave it on this note, but I did mention at the top, we were going to talk about Tommy Morrison. So Tommy Morrison was a real boxer, and that Stallone saw him and saw how like jacked he was, and what a good, legitimately good boxer he was at the time in Stallone. So Stallone brought him in to play the role of Tommy Gunn. Tommy became a pretty successful boxer for a while, to the point where he wins the WBO championship, which is one of the many heavyweight titles you can win in the boxing world, in 1993. He beats George Foreman for it. In 1996, however, he tests positive for HIV. He's immediately suspended. He fights for reinstatement, denying he ever had HIV. He gets his reinstatement, but then it is found out that some documents were forged because he claimed he had gotten a false positive test. And apparently somebody forged some sort of document that allowed him to use that. So he went back into the ring at that time, and for the rest of his life denied that he was HIV positive, which in fact he was, and he would eventually pass away from the disease in 2013. So I bring that up just because it's such a wild story, and it's, you know, a small part of his, you know, history as being in Rocky V. But if you want something else to see that's as bleak as Rocky V, but certainly more well done, watch the 30 for 30 on Tommy Morrison, because his story is pretty wild. But it's interesting stuff to see. So on that note, let's...
I feel better about life.
Yeah.
Yeah. But let's wrap this conversation up, and let's take Rocky V to the guilt meter. On a scale of 1 to 5 shame spirals, 1 being you love this movie, you want everybody to see Rocky V, 5 being you either hate this movie, or if you watch this movie, you'd never make anybody else watch it. You would self-quarantine and watch it on your own. Where does Rocky V rank on the guilt meter? John, let's start with you.
I'm going to go with about a 2 or a 2.5. We'll say a 2. Let's be definitive.
Okay.
People need to see it. Obviously, as we have revealed in the past, you know, this conversation, there's a lot more depth to it if you want to look at it. Because it was a good exercise to watch it again, because there is more to it. It's still an implausible storyline. The plot is full of holes. It makes no sense. But still, there's a lot more to it than I think maybe we were giving it credit.
All right. Aaron, how about you?
For me, it's clearly a 5, because it just ruins the whole series. You know what I mean? Like, it's such a bad movie that it's not just, like, its badness actually infects the rest of the Rocky series and makes them worse movies for it having existed. And so, like, if I tell people, hey, you should watch the Rocky series, I specifically go out of my way to say, just read a synopsis about 5 and then skip straight to Rocky Balboa. Because there's nothing you need to see in this film to appreciate the whole arc of the story, and it's just patently a stupid movie.
John, I believe looks like you got a counterpoint.
I do. My counterpoint is this: you say it ruins the arc up until that point. Without Rocky V and without some half-assed way of bringing him back to the streets of Philadelphia, there is no Rocky Balboa. There is no Creed I. There is no Creed II.
This is, you know, that's solid logic.
You know, I will say this. I think they could have just done a montage. The whole movie could have just been a montage of like, Rocky comes home. The IRS is at his house. They're taking away all of his stuff. And then he's back in like the streets of Philadelphia. In fact, I'm going to spend my free time tonight making a montage that people can watch instead of having to watch this movie.
You probably could, to be honest, is you could, and you know, Rocky Balboa starts with his son being estranged. So you could go ahead and cut out that reconciliation scene. Mm-hmm. So you could get there, but I'm gonna actually give this a 3. I'm gonna go a little higher than John, a little lower than Aaron, because it is, as far as a guilty pleasure goes, it's guilty in the sense that it's pleasurable for me because I am such a Rocky fan. I would sit through this at any time. I think if you want to watch the whole series, you could skip Rocky V, but at some point you have to kind of double back and go to it. I think I'm a completist. You watch the whole series and just know, and because like if it had ended at Rocky V, I would say you could go 1 through 4 and then be done. But because we have Balboa and Creed, now you know that there's other good stuff on the other side of it. I have no problem saying you should see Rocky V. I think, and I think it's important to know, like, how it also, to me, kind of retroactively shows you how good and what a miracle the first Rocky is, because how you could take that story and make it completely awfully is a very fine line, because the same man that wrote Rocky I wrote Rocky V. The same man that directed Rocky I directed Rocky V. So same crew, same people, way different result. So I have no problem saying you should check it out. It's currently on iTunes for $4.99 in celebration of its 30th anniversary. So I know that because I bought it for this podcast because I didn't have time to watch my Blu-ray. So yes, I own this in two formats now. Thank you very much. I'm doing great. But anyway, that's going to do it for this podcast. I want to thank you both for joining us. Hope you guys are enjoying your shelter in homes. You got any projects or anything coming up that you're working on? Anything special that you're doing while you're in your quarantine situations?
Just trying to not screw up my children's education.
Yeah, fair. Aaron, how about you? Anything, you got anything you're working on?
No, it's like the first time in probably like a decade that I have nothing going on because everything that I do is shut down right now. But it's actually it's a good break, other than, you know, the imminent pandemic. It's been very relaxing.
Good. All right. Well, good. Well, I've got some stuff we've got going on with the Front Row Network. We're trying to get back in full swing, and obviously a lot of us are home, so we're going to be recording a lot more stuff. I know I just did a classics episode about Godfather 2 that should be dropping, and I went ahead on that. I went on record on that podcast, and I guess I'll go on record on this podcast to say, I guess we're going to have to do Godfather 3 for Guilty Pleasures, so because it's celebrating its 30th anniversary too. And I'm home. I got nothing but time. I might as well watch a 3-hour crap fest. So yeah, we're going to be doing that. And also coming up on Facebook, through the Front Row Network, we're going to be doing another live bracket podcast. This time we're going to be talking about the greatest TV theme songs of all time. That's going to be going down Friday, April 16th. At 8 p.m. on our Facebook page. So make sure if you're not following us on Facebook, go ahead and do that. But be checking that page around 8 o'clock that night and watch me and whoever else I can get laugh and have some fun, talk about TV theme songs and have some fun for a couple of hours and maybe provide a nice little break to everybody for what else, whatever, everything else we got going on. So Friday, excuse me, that is a Friday, April 17th. I was corrected on that. My days mean nothing anymore. Yeah. dates and times mean nothing, but yes, Friday, April 17th at 8 PM on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter at the fake Lou Hare or on Instagram at Lou Hare. Let me know, have you watched Rocky Five? What are your thoughts? Are you going to watch it? Did you watch it because of this podcast? If so, bless you. And of course, if you like and subscribe on iTunes, leave us a 5-star review and request a guilty pleasure in the review, we'll do it. If you share our link for our Spotify page and request it when you post on social media, we'll do it there too. So I got nothing but time. So let's get weird. So send me some guilty pleasure recommendations. We'll talk about it. But in the meantime, tune into everything else we got going on for the Front Row Network. I know classics and flashbacks are all up. We could review some new movies if some of those get released to streaming services. Who knows? But you'll know all of that by following us on Facebook or on Twitter at Front Row Reviews with a Z, or going to nprillinois.org, where you can see all of links to all of our shows. And you can see my latest article, which is the top 10 guilty pleasures of the last decade. So that's a fun little quarantine watch list if you're looking for some mindless, dumb entertainment. So hopefully that gives you something to do and come back and tell me what you think. But anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of Guilty Pleasures. I want to thank you both for coming on again. I want to thank you all for listening. I hope everybody's doing well. I hope you're staying safe. I hope you're communicating with people. You're reaching out through FaceTime or Zoom or whatever you're doing to keep in touch with people. And in this kind of weird time, it's nice to spend an hour and a half talking about a garbage movie from 30 years ago. And I hope this was enjoyable for all of you and enjoy it as it was for us. But until next time, for the Front Row Network, I'm Lou Hare.
I'm Aaron Randall.
And I'm John Bowser.
And as always, we'll see you in the front row.
You come full circle, now you're home. Without the gold, without the chrome. This is where you've always been. You had to lose so you could win. Rise above your troubles while you can. Now you can love, now you can lose, now you can choose. That's the measure of a man.